Hi, I'm Neil. I'm Neil Gillespie. I go to this church. I'm part of KXE. I've been here from the start, there or thereabouts. I am a missionary, and I work for London City Mission. And I lead a small team in the area. And we really focus all our energy and efforts on the local street population and the marginalised community. We partner with a few local churches running various projects and drop-ins. We also do street outreach, and we do hostel visits, and we go to hospitals to visit contacts that we know. And we're also involved in chaplaincy work in prison with Caris. So yeah, it's an absolute privilege. I love what I do. It's an honour. And there's one man who's purely responsible for my vocation, if you like. It is not St. Francis of Assisi. It's not Nicky Gumbel. And it's not even Pete Hughes. It's this man. Do most of you know who that is? Yeah, it's George Best. It must have been October 2008. It was Halloween night, and I was off to a party, a dead famous party. So the idea is that you go as someone who's famous and dead. So I put on a red jumper with a white number 7 on the back, put on some white shorts, and headed into Belfast city centre, dressed as George Best. And I know what you're thinking. There is a slight resemblance, but the hair is not quite right. It's clear on the screens, actually, but yeah, what was I thinking? Before we go any further, we need to have a look at the cultural context of this story. As Pete would say, the world behind the text. George Best in Northern Ireland was and still is a cultural icon. The word legend doesn't even begin to come close to doing justice. Anyway, I'm making my way into Belfast city centre, Halloween night, busy night, right? And I am nothing short of worshipped. Taxi men are beeping their horns, winding down their windows, shouting out. Lads on the Raz are running up to me, hugging me. There was actually one woman who was quite upset and thought that I was being incredibly disrespectful. So they take George Best quite seriously in Belfast. So anyway, I made it to this venue, this club, and it was sold out, so I couldn't go in. And that's the end of the story. That was a joke, by the way. Feeling rejected and not really wanting to go straight home, I went to the chippy to get a sausage supper, as you do. And as I was in the chip shop, it erupted with song. People were singing, "Georgie, Georgie, they call you the Belfast boy." That was a song, actually. I won't sing it. And it was initiated by two rough sleepers that had seen George Best, or at least me dressed as George Best, walk into a chippy. And they come over in the chip shop and started singing, and everyone was a bit boozed, so they all joined in. And anyway, when I got my order, I was on my own, so I decided to eat with them. And I sat down, and I spent hours and hours, and I stayed out most of the night, and it was incredible. It was really funny. It was really good crack, but it was also incredibly sad as they opened up about their pasts, their stories, and their failures. But that night was a huge eye-opener for me. By the way, I did everything that you should not do that night. I was a safeguarding nightmare. I was on my own. I drank with them. I stayed out until the early hours, only in a retro United strip. And then I gave them 20 quid and I went on my way. So if you want to do any sort of homeless ministry, use that as an example of what not to do. Anyway, Yeah, all that to say, I feel like something happened for me that night. There was a moment in my life that night. And I suppose it was a fascination and an interest as well as a deep concern with the marginalized community, the street community. So that kind of little tale, that little moment, started my journey with spending time with the marginalized, and I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. But I'm not wanting to talk just explicitly about homeless ministry. It might mean that for some, but what I want to talk about is a phrase called the local other. I want to talk about the local other, which is a phrase coined by a guy, David Benjamin Bloor, from the Nomad podcast. And it's an observation that Christians today, you know, do genuinely care for others, but often by supporting charities and organizations and projects, which is all really, really good and really essential. But he says there is a far less removed, much more immediate other, often right in front of us, the local other, which is more personal. So instead of the poor, the elderly, the incarcerated, it becomes about the person, that elderly person, that elderly man or woman, that particular prisoner, that young mum struggling with debt. And it's with this in mind where the need becomes relationship rather than charity. And I feel like it's this kind of other that we see Jesus concerned about, the local other. Yeah, I want to say this, though. It is so evident, even from this afternoon, that KXC are doing this. This is happening. This is amazing. That there's so many in this church community, so many of you, that are entering into the most genuine, you know, authentic relationships with the local other. You know, say in prison ministry or choices or growing hope, you know, or Andy and Hannah, like it's happening and it's really, really exciting. But it's often just that they're the quiet ones, so we may not hear about it that often. We did hear about it today, which was awesome. But also, to be honest, it can be quite hard and difficult to communicate because you don't always have fruit and progress seems slow, so it can be quite hard sometimes to communicate. There were two guys at KXC who were amazing at befriending someone that we know quite well, and a guy. He had multiple issues as a result of trauma and mistreatment, and they were amazing. They kept in touch with him. They listened to him. They took him out for dinner, and they have supported him even through a legal case, and it's incredible and inspiring to see them know and love him in a very direct and local way. Richard Beck, a psychologist and a blogger, talks about the process in his personal journey of faith, and it's similar for many, many of us. He talks about over time, you know, questioning and shaping his worldview theologically, politically, and arriving at a place that seems to work for him. Then getting there, being there for a while, and just desiring the next level, wanting more. And he says this great line. He says, okay, I get that Jesus loves me, but now I need to work out how to love like him. And there's a significant shift, isn't there? Shall we read the Bible? Probably a good idea. We're in church. Matthew chapter 9, verse 9 to 13. The calling of Matthew. Matthew chapter 9, verses 9 to 13. I've got a little slide here, so the verse isn't going to come up here, but we can just like read along. It's just a little image for the visual learners. Sure, why not? Yeah, let's get me off there ASAP. All right, I'll just start reading. Yeah, so from verse 9. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with the tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." From the get-go, the first thing, Jesus sees Matthew. It's like the eighth word. He takes notice of him. There are so many layers going on in society, aren't there? So many unseen layers. And I don't just mean kind of physically, but, you know, people's lives and people's stories beneath the surface are very complicated. I met a guy recently from Central Eastern Europe, and he looked really well. He was incredibly intelligent. English was amazing. It was at a homeless drop-in. And as I spoke to him, he began to open up. And it turns out he had driven to London and had run out of money, insurance, and diesel, and is sleeping in his car out by the M25. And he had walked 4 hours into central London to look for work and kind of stumbled into one of our projects. He told me that he had sold his iPad for 80 quid and he had 20 quid left. The complications of his life are totally, totally unseen by virtually everybody. I suppose I was, you know, privileged to get a glimpse that afternoon, but totally unseen by everyone. But we know, we take the first thing from this passage, we take that Jesus sees the unseen, that Jesus is aware of those unnoticed. Now, you'd be right in saying that, well, actually, that's not what's going on in the story, because Jesus sees Matthew at a tax collector's booth, so it's quite clear who Matthew is. There are no secrets there. In this case, who is clearly on display. A tax collector, scumbag, absolute scumbag, doing deals with the occupying force, a traitor to Israel, getting filthy rich by shamelessly exploiting his own people. A man who is disliked by society, a man who is detested by society. And I find this one hard, because this isn't Jesus loving the poor, this is Jesus loving the detestable. So first, he sees him. Then secondly, he calls him. I think initially reading this, it sounds like a bit of a disciplinary sort of thing or something. Matthew, follow me. Not a terribly good first century Jewish accent, but understanding now a little bit of the intensity of the rabbinic educational system and the honor that it was to be chosen as a rabbi's disciple, it's clear that this is a radical act of acceptance and inclusion rather than correction. And that correction comes as a sort of inevitable result of acceptance. So first he sees him, and then he calls him, and thirdly he joins him. He has dinner at Matthew's house with lots of other people also disliked by society. And this isn't a standalone incident. You know, the story of Zacchaeus is very similar. Zacchaeus being a chief tax collector, also not poor, but incredibly wealthy. You know, Jesus does the same three things. He notices Zacchaeus in a tree, he calls him out of it, and he joins with him at his house. And I suppose my point here is that I feel these three things are, for me, the backbone of mission. To see, but to see in a way that takes notice of, and then to call, to take some form of action of invitation, and then to engage with. Thirdly, you know, to join in with, to partner alongside in some way. Yeah. So I've used the word mission, and I've used the word missionary, and that will provoke many, you know, responses in the room. It might really excite some of us. Some of us might have grown up in family or church where that was a thing, you know, supporting overseas missionaries. Or maybe even some of us have gone on a few mission trips ourselves. And others will cringe a wee bit, let's be honest. It's not really for me. It's a little bit old school. And fair enough, because not only is it not very, very cool, but these words also have negative connotations. You know, Christian mission hasn't always felt like that of God. Often intrusive, patronizing, and at its worst, destructive. But I really believe that mission in its essence, in its true essence, is the vehicle that God will use to bring about restoration. And maybe we just need to frame it slightly differently and use other language. And that's kind of what I hope today we'll do a little bit. So the whole idea of mission is not only about a movement towards something, but actually moving into something. Traditionally, the focus was often geographical, moving into a nation or a culture with a message, attempting to usher in the goodness of the gospel into places, communities, and people's lives. London, as you know, is one of the most cosmopolitan, most ethnically diverse cities on the planet. So, in a sense, you don't have to go anywhere. The nations and the cultures of the world have come here. And also, cities almost always have this tension of the richest in society and the poorest in society virtually living on top of each other. Across from my apartment, there's a new build, and the bottom bit is a community center, and the middle bit is social housing, and at the top, there's like primo luxury apartments. And I feel this phrase that we're looking at, the local other, blows apart the concept of, you know, only some being called to the mission field, to use Christian language. Like, I think, I definitely feel like it's for us all. Because as long as we live in the city, there will always be the local other. It just means now maybe mission isn't entering into places, but entering into stories and entering into people's stories. So I get it, you know, time for everyone is a major limiting factor. You know, people have jobs. You know, we don't have time to commit to a project or a program. But what if it wasn't about devoting time to something, but rather someone, like literally one person? Joining with them in some way. What if charitable volunteering or service to the poor was actually just having a mate? Okay, it might look very different than you know your other friendships, but essentially it meant having one more friend that you care about, having a cup of tea with someone who is elderly, homeless, on probation, or struggling with debt. A friend and I were out for a drink recently. Well, actually, I was on the peppermint teas. It was Lent, but he had a drink. And he was telling me about this guy that he's noticed in his community who lives in the high-rises near his flat. And this man appears to have some mental health issues, a form of Tourette's. He walks the streets yelling expletives, which is naturally unsettling for people, so they cross the road or they move out of the way quickly. But my friend was saying he's choosing not to. Instead, he intentionally walks towards and close to him, and the man does the opposite. He becomes quite quiet and shy and stops yelling. And my friend has this genuine interest in him as an individual, a curiosity, a desire to move towards as opposed to move away. He's noticed him. And now he wants to know him. And I feel like that's a good metaphor or image for the church and its relationship with mission. Like, there needs to be a new fascination, if I can use that word, like an interest, a deep desire to move into relationship with the local other. And, you know, a realization that we learn from these relationships, that they're wonderful, they're fun, and that we discover more of who God is in these friendships. And that it's in these friendships we usher in the goodness of Jesus and build his kingdom. You know, to reference the metaphor, and perhaps the church, we, Church Big C, need to avoid crossing the road because of behavior that slightly unsettles. So with mission, the good news is that you don't have to go anywhere. The second bit of good news is that you don't have to quit your job. However, I feel like it does require stepping into something, entering into a level of chaos, people's lives and people's stories. I've mainly talked about mission, stepping towards and stepping into something and joining with, but we also want people to join with us, right? To fully be part of the church family, to belong. John Swinton, who is a professor in the University of Aberdeen, he's a professor of divinity, and he trained as a mental health nurse, and he's an incredible guy. Anyway, he talks about the difference between inclusion and belonging. And he talks about inclusion being a sort of legal and social term. You know, you can't show discrimination, therefore everyone is welcome, everyone is included, which is great. But belonging is slightly different. Belonging has a sort of spiritual weight to it. In order for someone to find belonging, they need to be loved. As he puts it, to belong, you need to be missed. To belong, you need to be missed. He says this, when you're part of a community, you can only fully be part of the community when you're no longer there and the community come and look for you. With inclusion, it doesn't really matter if you're there or if you're not there. Belonging means it matters to be there. Whew. Absolutely slayed me when I heard that. What a challenge. You know, as a team, you know, and it's our full-time thing, you know, we're in relationship with about 35 or 40 people. And I'm not sure if I have given this an awful lot of thought, this idea of, you know, to belong, you need to be missed. And if I'm honest, it's not the case for a lot. But one Sunday before the 4:30 service, Edith, my daughter, was losing it. So we went out for a walk. And I was thinking about this, and instantly a guy popped into my head. And I hadn't seen him for a few months, and I was concerned about him. And I thought, you know, yeah, I really miss him. And anyway, walked back to the church, and he was sitting there. It was incredible, looking really well. And I said to him, like, I've missed you. And I meant it, because I had just thought about that, and I'd thought about him. And the thing is, though, I feel challenged that I could do this much, much better, to actively look for him and others like him when they're not about. So that was a huge challenge for me, and it's something that I'm going to think about, and I think we as a church should think about. You know, to belong, you need to be missed. So I'll end with this, or as the pros say, coming into land. Robert Lupton, who wrote an excellent book called Toxic Charity, urges people to move away from a more traditional approach of doing for the poor into a doing with model. To move away from a more traditional approach of doing for the poor into a doing with model, which changes just about everything, actually. And you know, I think this idea that we've been looking at of entering in and joining with and doing with is at the very core of the gospel. It's at the center of what Christianity is. In Jesus, we see God entering into the chaos of this world. We don't have a God who stays far away and remains at a safe distance watching the world eat itself. Or as an incredible teacher, LCM's guy on Black once said, he said, you know, God doesn't wind up the clock of life and just leave it to tick along. Instead, we have a God who wraps himself up in human flesh and enters in, joins with us, and suffers with us. And here's another quote. You'll notice there's a lot of quotes. If you want a good talk, just like loads of quotes. Henry Nouwen, who's amazing, a priest and a theologian, he put it beautifully when he wrote this. This is brilliant. Jesus' whole life and mission involve accepting powerlessness and revealing in this powerlessness the limitlessness of God's love. Here we see what compassion means. It is not a bending toward the underprivileged from a privileged position. It is not a reaching out from on high to those who are less fortunate below. It is not a gesture of sympathy or pity for those who fail to make it on the upward pull. On the contrary, compassion means going directly to those people and places where suffering is most acute and building a home there. It's incredible, really inspiring. And we know that's it, isn't it? But we also know that that's just the story in part, that it's not just about joining in suffering. You know, we hope that people experiencing suffering will also experience resurrection and new life in Jesus. But my point is that as Christians, I feel like it does require this entering into something. And I don't know what it is, but it requires entering into something. Entering into people's lives and people's stories, but not empty-handed, with a hope and a light, the light of the world. So I admit that wasn't the most practical of talks of how to get involved in ministry and mission. But I just wanted to, I suppose, talk about a little bit of the journey that I've gone on with trying to understand mission a little bit more and share it with you guys. And I feel like a big thing for me is this shift away from projects, programs, which are awesome and so important, but actually as a church to kind of shape our culture into knowing. To knowing others, I think it's overwhelming. I feel like our culture, we want to fix things. Our generation, we want to be experts actually before we get involved. But my encourage would be like, don't wait for that, because you'll never be an expert, because it's someone's life and you can't be an expert on someone else's life. So like the idea of actually journeying with, I heard this amazing thing, just always be a student. So any individual, anyone in society, if you meet them, just remember that you're a student on their life, that you want to learn from them as well. And in that kind of co-learning, you can hopefully develop and stuff. And I think that applies so much with the marginalized community. Those ideas of be a student, don't wait to be an expert because you never will be. Don't think that you need to start a huge homeless ministry with about 100 people. One person. So instead of the something, the someone, and that's okay. So I think maybe as we enter into like a time of prayer and ministry, like maybe I was thinking about this, was chatting to Tim, like it'd be a bold and an incredible prayer to almost ask God to reveal that someone for you. The idea that person is out there at somewhere, someone that you can befriend and mentor, someone who you can be a student with, and that would be really cool, really exciting. And I think as well, another myth would be that we carry a guilt that we can't help. So even if you do meet someone and start to befriend them, don't feel guilty that you walk past other homeless people. Like it's okay, you know. But just maybe listen to God, see who the Spirit or what the Spirit puts on your heart, and kind of start to journey with that, because it's really exciting, it's really fun, and it's quite life-changing. So I guess that would be my ministry bit, but maybe I'll just, I'll pray. Maybe we could stand. God of love, thank you that you entered into the chaos of this world to join with us, Father. Lord, I pray for London. I pray for King's Cross. I pray for the marginalized, Lord. I pray that we will have a enthusiasm, as I talked about, this kind of fascination, this curiosity, that you would remove the desire to just try and fix everyone's problems and place on us a desire to know them and to love them and to be friends with them and do life together with them, Lord. And yeah, God, will you just now just place on our hearts, will you just place on our hearts the individual? We thank you for them wherever they may be, Lord, and we just really pray that you set up some sort of divine encounter and just an opportunity for that to kind of unfold, Lord. And I also pray in all this that you would give us profound wisdom and discipline, Lord, and discernment between good decisions and bad decisions, Lord. And may this church just continue in the exciting conversation that we've got going about this stuff, Lord, and may it really, really just blossom, Lord. We long to see the fruit, Lord. We long to see progress in people's lives. Yeah, God. Thank you, Lord.